the vibe check. I pass the vibe check.
Pass the vibe check. The vibe check. Show the shoulder. Pass the vibe check. The vibe check. Truly, can you pass the vibe check? The vibe check. Show the shoulder. Pass the vibe check. The vibe check. Truly, can you pass the vibe check? The vibe check. Show the shoulder. Pass the vibe check. The vibe check. Truly, can you pass the vibe check? The vibe check. Show the shoulder. Pass the vibe check. The vibe check.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to I See Things a Little Differently. We're coming to you late, but we're coming to you on Monday, as I said. Just need to gather my thoughts, and I also wanted to just watch the show one more time. Not in its entirety, just the main matches that I was looking forward to. This is your AEW Dynasty review. The first ever Dynasty is in the books, and I thought it was a strong show. I thought there were a couple of matches that really did not need to be on this show. Or they could have been on the pre-show, but that's a whole other story. We'll get to that when I get to it. But I did want to say this. We are in a new era of wrestling, not just for WWE, but for AEW, for New Japan, for the entire landscape of professional wrestling. We are in a new era. And to me, AEW, this is where the best wrestle. You're damn right it is. It's not about sports entertainment. It's about professional wrestling. It's about leaning onto your strengths and leaving the weaknesses alone. I know a lot of people felt somewhat annoyed that Toni Storm took shots at WWE, but I didn't see it that way. Toni Storm does all these press conferences after the pay-per-view. She does all the media scrums since she's become Timeless Toni Storm. And I believe she's done every one of them since she's been Timeless Toni Storm. She's taken shots at everybody. Whether it's Wendi Richter, and by the way, I'm not even old enough to know Wendi Richter during her run, so I doubt you are. And the reason why I say that is because I look at the demographics. My demographics are really between 18 and 35. You know, I do have a little bit of an older crowd as well, but mainly it's 18 to 35 from this podcast. So we weren't around for her run. I know the history of Wendi Richter, how she's a part of the first screw job with Moolah screwing her over and Vince McMahon screwing her over, but she's taking shots at her as a WWE person. Like, she is a Hollywood starlet from the B-lot in Hollywood on Warner Brothers. She takes shots at everybody. She even took a shot at Nikki Bella, a.k.a. Nicole Garcia, saying that she couldn't hang over there with a pussy saying no candle. Like, so I didn't take it as that. I honestly did not, you know. I think people just are tired of the shots, period. So it may seem like she took one. I really don't. I'm not going to say I would be surprised. I would not. But if you look at her press conferences, and I've watched all of her media scrums, she takes shots at everybody. That's just the way her character is, because her character is in lockstep with the show, with all the production. She's that starlet, right? But in this time of a new era, I truly believe this is the start of something special. Will Ospreay, Bryan Danielson, Swerve Strickland, Samoa Joe, the Young Bucks, Jack Perry. We saw, to me, us moving on from the CM Punk era, officially, in my opinion, which we should have been moved on from, but we couldn't. I truly believe, and I hope, but I do believe. I didn't buy any hopium this week. So I'm believing that we have moved on from the CM Punk era, and now we are on to the era of Swerve, on to the era of Ospreay, Okada, etc., etc. This show, to me, was fantastic. The AEW pay-per-views, they're hard to miss, bro. That's why when you do have a rare one that doesn't hit the same, people are like, I can't believe that was bad. It's like, well, like, they're 9 out of 10s most of the time. Or 10 out of 10s. Like, it's hard. This is just what they do. You know, so it was really exciting stuff. We're going to get into some news and notes after this, but I want to hit the review first. And for the record, me and JT will get together probably on Thursday or Friday of this week, and I will drop that episode later in the weekend or that day, that night, depending on how long it takes for us to finish and me to do the edits. But I'm looking forward to getting his take on it. We actually didn't talk much. We talked a little bit during pay-per-view, but we didn't talk much, you know, which is okay. I'm going to let him mainly do his talking, and you guys will hear my thoughts here. But in a zero-hour match, the Bang Bang Gang, the Bullet Club Gold, have all the gold. They're now the Ring of Honor Trios champions, and the AEW Trios Champions, which is what I thought this was all leading to anyway. So I'm assuming they're gonna be on both, and that's cool, I guess. But those titles, I'm assuming they're gonna go back to their black straps and not their pink. So and actually, it's funny because I've not posted this picture. I did post a picture of Sting, but actually, Anthony Bowens, when I took my picture with the Acclaimed, he was like, "Hey, you wear this shit," and he put the belt on, which is pretty cool. So that's like the third or fourth time where someone's a wrestler has been like, "You're too quiet, man. Put this belt on." Honky Tonk Man did that. Anthony Bowens did that. Thunder Rosa did that. Britt Baker did that. So that's pretty cool. But anyways, the pay-per-view, the main show started with Okada defending the Continental Championship against Pac. Look here. The Continental rules, for those of you guys who have forgotten, there's no interference. It's just straight wrestling. It's pure wrestling. This is the way it started to show off. I thought this was a good match to start to show off with. Pac's selling is amazing. Him and Okada just... To me, I think they did a great job, and Okada was just pure douchebag. Well, he's about to do the whole Rainmaker thing, and he looks at the camera and gives the middle finger. This was great. And also, you know what was also great was seeing an actual sellout for AEW, but they did it in a smaller venue. The venue, I believe, only carried like 7,000 people, and they did a legit sellout. And that's the way to go. Do these smaller buildings. We don't need the bigger buildings. Like, you're not WWE yet, you know? Like, For the when you go out of the country shows, yeah, you're gonna need bigger buildings because those people pack those places in, you know, that's just what it is, right? And Wembley, they've already sold I think over 45,000 tickets, so like those other people, they don't get shows often. They might get them once a year or twice a year, so they're gonna pack those buildings in. That's a different story. You know, St. Louis probably gets shows 20 times a freaking year, dude. But to have them have a legit sellout, that was nice. And for people to see, want to be in that building, that's pretty cool. Because the death of AEW is being broadcasted way too soon. A lot of people's crystal balls are broken, in my humble opinion. So, Okada retains. I thought this was a great match. Pac is coming back from an injury. I know we don't get to see him very often, but it's always such a freaking delight to see him. And, I don't know where this goes with him. I'm assuming they're building up the Elite to then have people challenge the Elite for Blood and Guts. That time is coming close, too, as well. We're in April already, guys. So, like, in 2 months or 3 months, we're going to see Blood and Guts. So I'm assuming it's going to be 4-on-4, Blood and Guts, Elite versus whoever. I'm assuming Pac is going to be on that team. But anyways, moving on. The House of Black versus Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe. Essentially, I went into the thing, I picked House of Black. I said there's no reason for me to believe in this because they just don't win very often. But it was funny because I was texting JT during the show. I said, you know what they should do? They've been teasing this feud between Copeland and Black. They need to go old school. And I say old school because I remember this vividly from, I keep telling you guys, 96 is just seared into my freaking memory, right? And I said to myself, I said, what they should, my first time I ever saw this, I remember seeing it was at International Incident, the July pay-per-view. It was a six-man tag. It was Camp Cornette, Big Van Vader, British Bulldog, Owen Hart, versus the most random team of Shawn Michaels, at the time the WWF champion, Ahmed Johnson, at the time the WWF Intercontinental champion, and it was supposed to be Ultimate Warrior, but Ultimate Warrior ended up getting fired for no-showing events. So they put Psycho Sid in that spot. Well, in that match, Big Van Vader pinned Shawn Michaels, which allowed him to then get the WWF Championship match at SummerSlam the following month. I said, they should go old school. They should have Malakai Black. I said this before the finish. They should have Malakai Black pin Adam Copeland, which will lead to a one-on-one TNT Championship match, which I think should be the match at Double or Nothing. It'll be a great match on Collision or Dynamite. I know the House of Black has previously only been working Collision, because that's what Malakai Black has asked for. But that should be a match for Double or Nothing. We already have our first match set up for Double or Nothing, which we'll get to in a second. But I think that should be, and that's exactly what they did. Adam Copeland takes the pinfall. I don't think, has he really, outside of Christian, I think it's only like his second loss. You know, do I think Malakai Black's going to actually beat him in a one-on-one match? Probably not. But that's going to be a hell of a match at where whenever they do have it. And now he has a pinfall over the TNT champion. He will get a TNT championship match. That's going to be up next. I thought this was a fine match. And I thought it was needed to build to the TNT championship match that we're going to get. And I didn't know this before, but in the TBS championship match, I had no clue that Julia Hart actually had been nursing a shoulder injury. Otherwise, I would pick Willow. I was thinking it was a heel turn going to happen, but no, this match was pretty short, quick to the point. And Willow Nightingale has won the TBS championship. I am so happy for her. You know what she reminds me of? Her, Sky Blue. They just, if you look at them when they first had their early AEW runs, and Willow's been all over the place. But like you see them, they're taking all these big time losses, and Willow reminds me of Eddie Kingston as well. Taking all these losses, she only got the win over Mercedes last year because Mercedes had got hurt, and Mercedes called the audible for her to win because she knew it was serious, right? And so now Willow is a TBS champion, only the fourth TBS champion in history. I think it's sad that Julia Hart's run had to come to an end, but also it was probably going to come to an end anyway because someone pointed out to me. They said the match and the money's in Willow versus Mercedes because of what happened last year. I said, you know what? That's true, you know? And I know there's rankings and I know people are mocking it or whatever, but look here. If her first match, Mercedes, is not going to be until Double or Nothing, then just why not? You know, but Willow gets there. Willow has her first championship in AEW. And here's the thing. I keep saying this. Say what you want to. Those titles, with the exception of the TNT championship, which has gotten some stability over the last year, like, they have protected those titles. Like I said, there's only been 8 AEW champions, world champions, only, what, 6 or 7 AEW women's champions, and not only 4 TBS champions. Those titles are mainly protected, you know. And Willow has been putting in the work. I still believe there's a heel turn coming with Willow and with Chris Statlander and Willow. I believe that's the next feud that's going to lead us into All In and Wembley, et cetera, et cetera. But congratulations to Willow. Congratulations to Julia Hart on having a hell of a run and a hell of a showing, stepping her game up to the next level. Because there are levels to this. And I truly believe that Julia Hart, I can see her with the big dogs now. Willow and Chris, they could be with the big dogs too, but I believe that they're keeping them at that level for a reason. I can see Julia Hart, when she comes back, interacting with the top brass in the AEW's women's division. So, with that being said, our first match for Double or Nothing is official. It is Mercedes versus Willow. I would assume it's going to be a title change, or may not. I'm assuming her first match, since they're holding off on this being her first match in AEW. I'm assuming it's going to be a title change, which it sucks because it makes Willow a transitional champion, but I do think there's going to be a heel turn involved. I still maintain that Statlander is turning heel. Next up, Kyle O'Reilly challenging for the International Championship for the very first time. Roderick Strong defending, and this was a good match as well. I understand why they put it on the pay-per-view. I do. This could have stayed on Collision, though. I honestly believe... here's the thing. Let me make this bluntly clear. If you're still ordering traditional pay-per-view like I am and like other people are who order these AEW pay-per-views... Because now I live somewhere where the pay-per-views aren't even in the movie theaters. Like, when I was in Colorado, I would just go to the movie theater. And that was, like, I think a 20-buck thing, right? And so that was a really good deal. Around wrestling fans, you're having fun... whatever, right? And I really actually miss the atmosphere, but I've driven all over to many different movie theaters, even though it's on their marquee, like, they're not actually showing it here. A 4-hour pay-per-view. I just wish they started at 7. If they did a 0-hour at 6 and actually started at 7 and went to 11, I think I would appreciate that more than the 8 to 12 thing they got going on now. But anyway, it might be the deal they have with the pay-per-view subscriber or whatever. But anyways, for $50, 4 hours is not a bad deal. It's a great deal, actually. So you're getting your money's worth. I don't care what anyone says, right? This match, there was just no heat to it. O'Reilly just got beat up and turned on from a Strong just like last week. So I enjoyed the match. It was just, but the real reason this was on pay-per-view is because Adam Cole was out there. Well, he ended up showing up at the end of the match. He got out of the wheelchair and walked without the boot for the very first time. Still walking gingerly. I don't know if he's cleared to wrestle or not, but the money shot was Adam Cole getting into the ring and staring at Wardlow menacingly behind his back. I mean, do we not know? Someone said, where is this going? I said, are you kidding me right now? You don't know where this is going. This is the easiest story to tell. Wardlow failed. Here's the thing. They made a deal. Adam Cole did. The devil. Air quotes. No air quotes. Excuse me. No air quotes. The devil made a deal with Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe got the AEW World's Heavyweight Championship. But Wardlow was supposed to be the one to take the AEW World's Championship from Samoa Joe and hand it to Adam Cole, Andre the Giant, to Ted DiBiase style. Well, Wardlow did not pass that test. So now his usefulness is pretty much up. So what's going to happen here is, eventually, they're going to beat the fuck out of Wardlow, take him out and kick him out of the Undisputed Kingdom. And because right now he feels like the third wheel on a date. He just does. And what they're clearly going to do is lead to an MJF Wardlow reunion and taking on the Undisputed Kingdom. That's clearly where this is going. But it was a nice surprise. I know it was like big time reports about how Adam Cole's not anywhere near close. I wasn't expecting Adam Cole to come back until like Double or Nothing anyway. Or even later, you know. So if he is walking without that boot, that's very encouraging. But more importantly, that means MJF, whenever he's healed up, that's going to probably be the feud for the summer. And honestly, I could see their rematch, Cole and MJF, at Wembley this year with no titles on the line. I can see that being a thing. Next up, another match that didn't need to be on this pay-per-view, but it just had to be on here. Chris Jericho versus Hook for the FTW Championship. It is being reported that Hook, when his contract is up, he is going to explore his options, which he should. He's kind of stuck in this weird... You know what it feels like? It feels like in Chris Jericho's first book when he said Cruiserweight Hell. It feels like Hook is stuck in this FTW hell. They need to get him away from that, but I don't think they know how to get him away from that. I will say this. His selling still needs some work, but he's still young. He still has a good look. He's talented as all fuck. But there's something missing there to me, in my opinion. But he can be more, you know. And I believe that FTW title is just holding him back. I truly do. And Jericho always needs to find a way to stay in the loop. I know he's going to eventually put Hook over, but now he's the FTW champion. I did not listen to the commentary during this match, but I did read the articles that people were saying, please go away, please retire, Fozzy sucks. Look, I am in the belief that everyone else is as well. I think Jericho just needs to go away for a little bit and then come back, he'll be fresher. Right now, these feuds that he's in, they feel forced. They feel really forced, which has never been a thing before. But he still has a desire to wrestle, you know? But I think he just needs to take a break for a few months, you know? But this... I literally took a shower during this match. I cleaned my kitchen. I know the match didn't go that long, but, like, I legitimately had it on mute, and I just was off. I wasn't excited about this match going into it, and it did nothing for me going out of it. But Chris Jericho is your new FTW champion, as he adds another accolade on his impressive Hall of Fame career. Next up, Toni Storm defending her AEW World Women's Championship against the woman who never lost it. A woman who got a back injury and lost 18 months of her career. Thunder Rosa, who came out very... I don't know what she was wearing, but it looked like... I'm sure it was something from her heritage. It looked cool as hell. It also gave me Rey Mysterio vibes. You know, I really liked what she did. Had the mask on and everything. And when she took the mask off, like, she had no makeup on this one. So it was, like, symbolic of Toni Storm wiping the makeup off, and it was pretty cool. Storm brought out Mariah May and Luther. I thought this was a decent match. I enjoyed the match, actually. I thought it was a good match. All four matches are going to be the same until more. The one thing I'm taking from this whole thing, I said this the other day, is that Mariah May is going to be the one to take that championship from. I just see it. It just feels like that. I don't know how long Mariah May will have the title afterwards, but I think that's just going to be her moment. That's what she takes that title from her, but I really enjoyed this character work, and I enjoyed the match as well. Deanna Perazzo tried to come out to even the odds, and it wasn't enough with Toni Storm cheating. Next up was already the match of the year, and we're just in April. But Will Ospreay, one-on-one with Bryan Danielson for the very first time. Will Ospreay has been on a roll in AEW. All his matches have been bangers, but this one, by far, it was fantastic. Even the finish, and someone brought up to me the camera work, and I said, I didn't think about that. Like, the very end of it, where you see Bryan Danielson in the corner doing the yes chant, you see Will Ospreay, like, taking off his elbow pad for the hidden blade, who's going to hit it first, and then you have this injury angle, doing air quotes again, where he hits a tiger driver, which Bryan was very well protected. He protected himself, and Ospreay protected him as well. But he claimed he didn't see the referee calling for the medical staff. He hits the hidden blade, pins Bryan, ends up walking back with him. He claimed, Ospreay did, that he's going to retire the Tiger Driver. I believe this is leading to another match. I do. I know it was a way to probably write Bryan off, but, like, this is his last full-time year. He's clearly going to end it at Wembley, retire full-time at Wembley. I think we're building to another match, and I don't know what they're going to do in that other match, but this was freaking fantastic, and I was literally texting JT. I was like, I want more. I need more. I was such an addict. I was scratching for more of this. It was just fantastic. I loved everything about this match. I loved how they gave each other everything, and even then, it just didn't fuck enough to me. This is just what you're able to see in AEW. This is why this is a new era, and this is why they need to focus on this. In the finals of the tag team title tournament, you have FTR versus the Young Bucks. The winner will be the first ever three-time AEW tag team champions, but they added a ladder match stipulation. So now you have the ladder match involved. This Dax was busted open. This was a fun match as well. The fans were chanting, please be careful. This was, I thought there was no way they could follow what they just did with Bryan Danielson and Ospreay, but the next two matches did what they needed to do to make sure that they kept the crowd intact with what was going on. And like most predicted, Jack Perry made his return, costing FTR the AEW World Tag Team Championships. And then when Perry left, he had this big smile on his face. He threw up the Elite sign. He's clearly the fourth member of the Elite. I think we're going to have those four. Okada, the Bucks, Jack Perry versus another four, and Blood and Guts. I truly believe that's where this is going. But now, Young Bucks are now the first ever three-time AEW World Tag Team Champions. And in the main event, we got Killmonger version of Swerve Strickland versus Samoa Joe, 114 days strong as a world champion, the seventh world champion in AEW history, and it's very short history. Joe, it was a great run. I was so happy to see Samoa Joe as a world champion. This was the time to pull the trigger on Swerve, and they did. And you could tell throughout the entire match that Swerve, the emotion on his face, he was trying to keep it together, but he knew what this meant. He knew he was about to win this title. So it was clear he was, like, when you see someone like Cody Rhodes or whatever, they're pretty even kill. So you don't know if you're going to win or lose, right? This was so emotional for Swerve. And let me say this, and we'll talk about this a lot on this channel, and if you get offended by this, then that's your business. Representation matters. It just does. It's why the trans community is fighting for that right now. It's why African Americans or black people have been fighting for that for years, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This means more to Swerve Strickland than just him winning a title. My first familiarity with this man was in Lucha Underground with him being Killshot. And then he got signed to NXT. And I remember watching the Chris Van Vliet interview where he said that he was trying to be a Triple H guy. And Triple H just was never on that level, or Triple H just didn't see him that way. But he was trying to be a Triple H guy. He was trying to be that workhorse for him, but Triple H just probably just didn't see it. He had his eyes on other things. And then Shawn Michaels is the one that said to him, come to my office, let's watch some matches together, what you do. And Shawn Michaels and him watched some matches of his, of Strickland's. And he said, Shawn Michaels looked at him and said, we're not using you anywhere near to the ability that you have. How did we miss on this? And that's when Swerve was put with Hit Row, and that's when he was given the push with the North American Championship, probably the weakest North American Championship run of all time. But that was because, at that point in time, Bruce Pritchard, Vince McMahon, and Nick Khan had then gone to the Performance Center. And I remember vividly when this report came out, I'll never forget it, when it was like, oh, they made a trip to the Performance Center, everyone in those comments, and I never read the comments, but someone tells me to read the comments, everyone in that comments, the consensus was, hide Hit Row. I was like, God damn, that's scary. And they didn't. And they called him up and they fired him promptly after 2 months. And so he never got the chance in WWE that he was, even in NXT, even though he was North American champion, he didn't really get the chance he deserved. And so next thing you know, all of a sudden, he gets signed to AEW. He makes his debut, Revolution 2022. I remember watching that show. I would need to look at my events in Bleacher Report, because you can keep your events that you pay for and you can watch them all the time. I believe I did, or I don't know if I ordered that or not, but I remember he got a pop. He got a huge pop. And I was like, wow, I didn't know this guy was this over. You know, and that's just my naivety, I guess, right? And so next thing you know, they put him in a tag team with Keith Lee. They win the AEW Tag Team Championships, which I didn't see coming. I was extremely happy about it. Then they have a Match of the Year candidate with the Acclaimed. And Swerve said in his post-scrum comments, he said that was really got hit, put a chip on his shoulder was when they want to call an audible in that match. He said, man, all four guys are beating the hell out of each other, and they just want to take the belts off us. But we were doing a great job, and they were, you know. But it was the Acclaimed's time, too. You know, but anyways, he said that put a chip on his shoulder. And then Swerve went through this whole weird phase for the next 9 months, in my opinion, where he went heel, he did the Mogul Embassy thing, they brought in Prince Nana, Parker Boudreau, other people, and they didn't really have him on TV much, or they had him on there sparingly. And then something happened to where Tony Khan said, I have this motherfucker, I need to use him. And then last summer, he's on TV every week now. I remember saying to myself, all right, good to see him on TV, but you know, you got to see people consistently, right? So you still watch him. Now all of a sudden he's having this tag team match, and he's adding people, and now he's having a premier match in Wembley against Sting and Darby Allin. I'm like, all right, cool. And then he gets into the feud with Hangman Page, who I have gone on record of saying has the greatest story arc in the 5 years of AEW. And now you can add to that list elevation. This guy elevated Swerve Strickland. And everything Swerve was saying at the beginning of that feud about Hangman being complacent, about, hey, if I would have gotten the opportunities that you've got, I'll be the first ever AEW Black Champion. Then we had the match at WrestleDream. Great match. Only topped by the death match that they had, which was a fantastic death match. And then that just, this man could do no wrong. Just set him up for success. And then he was on a trajectory towards the World's Heavyweight Championship. There was no denying this. And now he connected. They did have a botch in the end, which you could tell was a botch. But him and Joe had a pretty good match. And it left with Swerve winning the AEW World Championship. Prince Nana is now the manager of a World's Heavyweight Champion. Couldn't be happier for both those guys. And I do believe this is going to lead to a run that's going to last until Wembley, and that's when Ospreay's going to take that belt. Can you imagine that fucking match when we get that? But I have a feeling we're going to see him versus... I think we're going to see him versus Hangman at Double or Nothing, him defending that title. But I am so happy for Swerve Strickland. I'm so happy for... look here. I remember tears of joy when Kofi Kingston won his WWE Championship. It means something. This doesn't happen in pro wrestling very often. It just doesn't. And to have an organic AEW talent get over like this, think about this. The 8 world champions we've had in AEW have been Chris Jericho, Jon Moxley. You can say those two are WWE guys. But then you have Kenny Omega, who's very much an AEW guy. He helped found the fucking company. Hangman Adam Page helped found the company. CM Punk is a WWE guy. Then you have MJF, Then you have Samoa Joe and Swerve Strickland. It's cool to see Samoa Joe, CM Punk, all those people win the title. It's even better to see Swerve Strickland and MJF, those guys, really have those title runs. So, extremely happy for this guy. He put the work in, and I believe he's going to have a strong championship run. I really do. Because he has feuds lined up. You can give Joe a rematch, but you have that built-in rematch with him and Hangman, where Hangman now is just going to lose his shit, because now he couldn't prevent the guy from getting the title. So now he's like, I'm going to take it from you now. I must take it from you because you used me as a stepping stone to get to this moment. I can't have that on my conscience. That's a built-in story right there. So with that being said, that is your AEW Dynasty review. I want to touch on a few notes before we get out of here. Matt Cardona tears his pec. He is getting surgery if he hasn't already had it. WWE released 6 people. Just announced was Von Wagner, who was released last week. Xia Li was released. Jinder Mahal was released. Zion Quinn was released. Veer Mahan and Senga were released. None of these are surprises. I think Xia Li has a great look. She was never really used. But Xia Li, I think, can go on the indies and probably even go to Japan if she really wants to work that style and have a great showing for herself there. The new tag team titles were revealed on Raw and SmackDown. I think the tag team titles on SmackDown look better than the ones on Raw, but that's just my personal take. AJ Styles is the new number one contender for the WWE World's Heavyweight Championship. I'm looking forward to that match in Backlash May 4th. I can't wait for that. And on SmackDown, this is not your Vince McMahon's WWE anymore. We have Blood for the second month in a row. Tama Tonga made KO bleed. Nick Aldis was pissed, saying, hey guys, if you can't keep your bloodline under control, I will do it. But they've made Tama to be strong. This draft is going to tell a lot of stories. The draft starts this Friday. My plan is actually to do a show on Saturday night and release it, just covering all the draft moves of Friday night SmackDown. Just so you guys know. And I don't know how my week's going to go next week, but I know I already have plans to do a draft coverage of the first night. I'm going to try to do draft coverage of the second night. I have to see how my weekend goes and see if I have any plans for that, but we'll go from there. But anyways, I thought this was a strong angle. Owens is going to need some help because everyone who helped Cody Rhodes and who brought Cody Rhodes up is going to now pay the price for the bloodline not having the World's Heavyweight Championship. Meanwhile, the Roman Reigns babyface has already it's already turning now. Fans are chanting for Roman, and it's things are already in place. I still believe they're acknowledging Solo and Tama. They're acknowledging The Rock as their new tribal chief. I truly believe that's where this is going. So, anyways, that's your show. I told you guys it would come late. I need to cook some dinner, get some rest, upload this show. Hope you guys enjoyed. I see things a little differently. I am the Soul Chemical, and we are out.